This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll learn about a smartphone app from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission that allows people to help scientists track horseshoe crabs along Florida's coasts. But first, by now, you're probably familiar with the so-called tiny house movement. The basic idea is to drastically downsize your life so it fits into a small, like 500 square feet or less, home. Sometimes they're on wheels and can be moved. Sometimes they're on foundations, like a normal larger house would be, but just a lot smaller. Part of the movement is about simplifying one's life and lifestyle, but affordability is also a driving factor. There's still no set definition as to what exactly constitutes a tiny house, but the tiny house movement in general promotes financial prudence and a shift in mindset away from consumerism. We're joined today by a panel of guests to explore this movement and why one would choose to pursue it. I'm joined by Terry Records. She's the administrator of a local meetup group called the Tiny House Movement of Southwest Florida. She herself lives in a tiny house, and she's a realtor and real estate broker working to help others find their way into the movement. Terry, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Well, thank you.
In studio, I'm joined by two people who also live in tiny houses. Dr. Serge Thomas is an associate professor of environmental studies at Florida Gulf Coast University. Serge, welcome back to the show.
Hey, nice to have me.
Under a different context from what we previously talked to you about, but also kind of impacting the environment, right?
Correct.
I'm also talking with Betsy Barber. She currently lives in a tiny house up in Central Florida, but commutes back to our part of the state. For now, she couldn't find a community here to live in her tiny house. Betsy, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks for inviting me.
And last but not least, we're also joined on the phone by Barbara Riley. She's the founder and director of Buildsworth International. They do third-party code compliance for tiny houses through inspections and certification. We've got her on the line to help us with any technical questions. Barbara, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Julie.
And as always, we invite our listeners to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. Terry, I want to start with you. You're out in North Dakota, I understand. What are you doing out there?
My husband is working, helping somebody out in the oil field, but I'm actually doing a research project for an upcoming tiny house deal that we have for our meetup group, and we will be hosting. There's a lot of people out in North Dakota that are living in tiny homes, and they've sacrificed a lot to live out here. So I'm doing an investigative report on it, and I'm going to be reporting on that on March 24th.
Oh, for your meetup group. So how long have you been involved in this tiny house movement?
It was an evolution. I came from Minnesota about 5 years ago, lived in a big house, on lots of acreage, and came to Southwest Florida when there was, it was snowbird season, so I ended up in an RV, and I'm like, well, gosh, you can live in an RV with less space. And then it just kind of went on from that, and I created this tiny house movement meetup because I saw so much interest in different people, but I am very analytical, and I see there's a lot of different reasons why people are interested in tiny houses. And the TV shows attract a lot of attention with the houses on wheels, but what I wanted to call attention to is they don't all have to be on wheels. It's the movement itself is really about downsizing and having a simpler life, but it can be different for different people. And so for my husband and I, yes, we've went from a big space to a smaller space, and we found a little house in North Fort Myers on the water for $65,000 and renovated it. And now we just actually moved out of it because we vacation rented it and the people were coming and we had to get out. And but we found that we don't need all the space and all the complication of our life that we used to have. So some of the reasons to open people's minds up, I want to challenge people and to think that why tiny houses? It's time. Maybe it's less time to clean the house, or maybe you can it's freedom. You can leave when you want to, or if yours is on wheels, you can go. You can take your house with you. Tiny houses can be very inexpensive, so maybe you're spending less money. Maybe you can pay for them with cash. Maybe you can finance them. Some people, their big why on why they might be interested in it might be environmental. I see a lot of people with, a green intention and wanting to, do that kind of a thing. Another group they want to do it all themselves. It's the do-it-yourself mentality. They're going to get in there with their tool belt, and they're going to build it with their own hands, which is great. Some people want to be off the grid. We have a tiny house that we'll be putting, figuring out how to do an outdoor kitchen and all of that in Montana this summer, and it'll be 80 square feet. And that will be off the grid. It does provide unique space. But it also, you know, there's, for example, not in our area as much, but for example, in California, there are people living under bridges. And so it can solve a homeless situation in a lot of different reasons. So that's what I found.
Mm-hmm. Do you experience a lot of pushback, though, from people that are looking at tiny houses as impacting property value of the McMansions?
Well, that is why I think our cities try and protect people, and they have minimum square footage requirements and things like that. I haven't experienced that myself, but if that happened, you know, if something odd comes into your area, I think it's nice and shiny and new when it comes in, but later on when it's used, it might not look the same. It might just look really small, and then that could impact. And so I think that's why our cities, you know, they have some certain rules in place that, you know, where you're going to build something that's smaller so that it, you know, they're minimum standards. So they may want to put tiny houses in a particular area altogether so that it's common instead of affecting something that's larger close by.
Yeah, that kind of makes. Do you see this as, I mean, we all know that here in Southwest Florida, there's a big problem with affordable housing or the lack of affordable housing in the area. Do you see tiny homes as being a possibility for helping to alleviate that?
Yes, I do. I think, as you know, right now our affordability index is we're still in a pretty good zone, but when our prices surge a little bit more, and really there's not enough attention at the low end of the spectrum for price ranges, the tiny house could serve for that. And what I wanted to do when I created my tiny house meetup was let people know, a lot of people think they have to be on wheels. They don't have to be on wheels. You can put them on a foundation, and it's easier to finance them when they're on a foundation because the loan companies are willing to lend money on them, and they're already existing. So you renovate them like what I did in North Fort Myers. You renovate the house. Mm-hmm. And so there are some older neighborhoods that could be renovated as well, slowly or quickly in our area that would serve that as well.
Mm-hmm. How many members do you have in your meetup group?
They're currently just over 500. And
wow.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good-sized number of people. If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Terry Records. She's a realtor and the administrator of a meetup group called Tiny House Movement of Southwest Florida. We're discussing tiny houses and alternative housing in general on today's show. And I'm also joined in studio by FGCU Professor Serge Thomas and a woman named Betsy Barber, both of whom live in tiny houses. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please feel free to give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Serge and Betsy, I want to turn to you guys now. Betsy, why did you decide to pursue a tiny home lifestyle?
Well, a lot of different reasons. A number of the ones that Terry has just so well outlined. I needed affordable housing. I've been associated with this area for about 40 years, but I lived overseas many of those years, so I would come to this area as my U.S. base. And I had a condo, and it was becoming outpriced for me. I just couldn't afford to keep it.
The HOE fees and all the...
Yeah, and upkeep is particularly built in 1986, so I was it was nickel and diming me.
Uh-huh.
But I started looking into the movement. I come from a background of living very simply. I lived actually off-grid for 10 years in Africa as part of my background, so I'm used to alternate housing. And and then also just the community side of it. I'm really interested in the idea of forming global communities, diverse communities where different types of people come together, as Terry was mentioning, with different needs and interests. And and I'm seeing in the tiny house movement that you've got an amazing interest in intentional community, sustainable community, that type of thing.
It's kind of like people who like to camp, but... like not as rustic.
Yeah, except yeah, and we're talking a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So when I say sustainable, it's like permanent living. It's not just like a 2-week vacation. So
exactly. Yeah, I mean, and when you're in it, you're committed. You're
yes,
there.
Yes, it is a commitment. And I moved into my tiny house the 4th, 5th of January. It's 25 square feet by 8, so 200, I'm sorry, 25 by 8 square feet, 200 square feet. And so it's small. It's on wheels. It is as it is built permanently on wheels, and it's code compliant. And Barbara will talk about that. Barbara's organization is my certifier.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's so interesting. So, Dr. Thomas, how did you get into a tiny house?
Well, I'm kind of a transient person in a tiny home because we're building actually a earth-sheltered home, which is very different.
So like, I'm thinking like an underground house?
Correct.
There aren't any hills here, though.
No.
So how are you doing that?
Well,
are you hitting water when you dig?
No, we actually are above ground.
Okay.
And we have dirt on top of the
Of
the dome.
So I see what you're saying.
So we're living right now in a camper until it's been built. So that's the idea. But the really, really real idea is that, you know, house size has been doubling pretty much every 30, 45 years. You know, that means a lot of stress for your finances, a lot of stress to the environment. You know, you need more land, you need more heating and cooling. So since I'm an ecologist, you know, I thought that's actually great. Now that I've lived in one, I love it. And scaling up from something about the same size, you know, 26 foot by 8 to 2,400 square foot will be a challenge. It goes both ways. It was a challenge to downsize, and I think it'll be a challenge to upsize. What I really like is you enjoy way more the outdoors. You're much closer as a family because, you know, you're living in tight quarters. You know,
you don't get to go run in your room and hide and be annoyed
exactly.
with somebody.
And, you know, we spend more time, more discussions. I think it's great. And more time outside, definitely. And your footprint is much, much lower. And I tell my students, you know, and I think it's, we are nearing the end of the baby boomers. You know, there's the one actually driving most of them, you know, the big, big homes. But my students, they don't really aspire to live in a big home. They would be very happy to live the life, you know, have a part-time job and do what they enjoy.
Yeah, be able to enjoy their life instead of, you know, instead of living to work, working to live kind of thing.
Correct.
That balances. How much stuff did you have to get rid of, though? I'm just thinking, like, how do you decorate for holidays? I mean, where do you store things? Do you have a storage unit for...
Yeah, I do. I have a storage unit at this point, but my goal is to be out of it by May. And it's a 10 by 15 foot storage unit, and it's full. So it's a garage type size. But the way you downsize for long-term sustainability is to take it one step at a time. And I'm finding living in the space is perfect. A couple of my friends, I live in a tiny house community in Central Florida. There's about a dozen houses already. We're going to have about 20 houses. It's called Cross Creek Village in Leesburg, if you want to Google it.
Uh-huh.
So a couple of the other folks that moved in when I moved in didn't have as much storage space, so they came with a lot of their stuff. And that was one type of challenge.
Talk about a yard sale, you know?
Yeah. But the storage for me has been to see what I need in my house. I've been in for 2 months now. It's amazing what I know I can live without. And so I think it's helpful to sometimes try it out and then just get rid of the stuff. I mean, if I haven't used it, if I haven't missed it, then I have a one burner. I never thought I would be able to. I cook a lot. I have a one burner, a small camp burner for my cooking, and a countertop toaster oven, and it's perfect. I have a 3.1 cubic centimeter cubic foot refrigerator. It's perfect. So small.
I'm just imagining the cooking situation with one burner. I just don't know if I could handle it. I thought
I absolutely had to have two, and it didn't fit well in my counter space, and so I'm trying one, and you accommodate. It's great. I love it.
Perfect.
Terry,
One of the things that I did was kind of fun is I did a pre-estate sale. So I invited my children and all of my endeared friends that I cared about, and I said, listen, these are the things I'm not taking. They're great. They aren't going to be worth anything in a yard sale. So I want you to pretend like I'm dead, and the first person picks, you know, the oldest picks first, second, and third, and so we got rid of everything. So that was fun. But I found you downsize in pieces, and so you find yourself doing storage, and then you look up, and you're like, oh, my gosh, it's 5 years later. $3,000 in storage. That's ridiculous. Yeah. So you go through again and you get rid of another layer and another layer. It's a process. So you can't do it overnight. And as you get better at it, you find that you need less. And I'm still not perfect, My husband will tell you I'm supposed to do the one in, one out method, which I'm not good at. I'm usually five in and one out. So
yeah. Well, I'm sitting here thinking about all of this, and I'm like, you know that feeling you have after you've done a good spring cleaning and you got rid of a bunch of stuff and the clothes that you haven't worn for more than a year and a half, and they're probably not going to fit again. I mean, let's be honest. But you know how you kind of finally get rid of a bunch of stuff and you just feel so good. Do you guys live in a constant state of just feeling lightened, like less heavy?
Yes.
Yeah.
I definitely do. And every day it's a fun to discover what I don't need and how I can work around it and what I can borrow. This is the other thing about community and having shared spaces and shared tools. There's a whole movement that's separate from the tiny house movement, but certainly impacting it, the intentional community movement. And they do a lot with, you know, shared tools, shared, they're even going into shared automobiles, shared vehicles. The whole sharing economy.
Having
is,
like a tool
one.
Shed for everyone.
Exactly.
That would make
so
sense.
So we're going to have a community garden and we'll have shared tools. We won't all have our own. We won't need it. We won't have our own stuff. So.
See, and then I'm thinking, though, idealistically, this is an aspirational thing. This would be a great thing to do. But is there a disconnect between what someone thinks they can handle and what they actually can handle? Terry, I'm wondering if there's anybody in your group that has come and said, you know, I really kind of thought I could do this, but I miss my Christmas tree. Or anybody that...
I don't know that that's happened. I mean, there are certainly people who turn off and just say, I can't do that. But that, you know, I think people, you know, see it and they think it's so drastic a step. But you don't really, it doesn't have to be 500 square feet either. I just want to challenge people when you go from 2,500 square feet, 1,200 square feet might be a tiny house to you. It's a personal thing. It's about changing your life in some way. So it can be a baby step to get there. So it doesn't have to be that drastic. And 1,200 square feet isn't even, you know, the counties don't even care about that. The cities don't care when you build that square foot. So it just might be, you know, you stair step your way into less, right? You try it out and see how it feels. I imagine
there aren't many Costco runs when you live in a tiny house.
I just had to debate the other day of getting mouthwash, and they were all so big, the bottles.
Well, my
thought, oh.
My treat to myself, though, so that my wardrobe doesn't get too big, is something called Rent the Runway. So if you're a person who still needs pretty clothes, but you don't want to own the whole wardrobe, you just rent them for the month, and it's pretty cool.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Send them back.
Yeah,
and then send them back when you're done. We're exploring the tiny house movement on this part of today's show. My guests are Terry Records. She's a realtor and the admin of a meetup group called Tiny House Movement of Southwest Florida. Serge Thomas is a professor at FGCU who lives in a tiny house. And also Betsy Barber is a local woman who lives in a little house, a little tiny one. And we're also joined on the phone by Barbara Riley. She's the founder and director of Buildsworth International. That's a company that does third-party code compliance through inspections and certification. We're going to turn to her next to find out how things like building codes and insurance fit into this story. So if you'd like to add your voice to our discussion, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So Barbara Riley, tell me a little bit about your company.
Well, we are a third-party inspection agency, and we are trying to, basically, we're just as concerned about the life and fire safety as a municipality would be. And we wanted to make sure that because there is little of definition of tiny house in code, we wanted to make sure that, you know, as this movement grows, that we're helping people to be able to build these with standards that are recognized from multiple industries, whether it's from the RV industry, the home building industry, and then to make sure that they're meeting the most stringent of environmental concerns, which would be wind, snow, moisture, and seismic. Builders are from all across the country, and their homes are DOT certified. They're crossing state lines, in the case of a tiny house, on wheels. And so they have to be built to the highest standards so that no matter where they end up, they are going to be compliant for and permissible for full-time dwelling.
Okay, so how do building inspections and code requirements and insurance work in the world of tiny houses? Is it pretty much the same as for a regular house or tighter because they can move?
Well, there is no particular authority having jurisdiction over a tiny house on wheels. There's no defined code. And so that does present a challenge. So what we're doing, again, is to meet all of those codes, provide and we're doing construction compliance inspections consistent with how a municipality would do it for a site-built home. So we're looking at stages as it's being constructed to make sure that it's meeting and exceeding the standards that are codes that already exist, National Fire Protection, Electrical Code, International Residential Code, and inconsistent with or consistent with the what the building departments are used to seeing. And then if, in fact, they were to need to be able to see this information and the codes that we share that, you know, that, that they're meeting, if there's any question about it, we have the visual record, the archive, that's available for them to be able to view that.
Okay, so I have a question. Say I've got a piece of land, and it's like a half acre, and it's in a neighborhood, but it's not a deed-restricted community or anything like that. It's just a piece of land. What is my first step if I want to just build a tiny home and it wants to be, and I want it to be fixed? I don't want it on wheels, but I want to put it on foundation.
Okay, one of the neat things about a tiny house on wheels is it can meet the foundation requirements for a municipality. So it could be on the wheels, it could be anchored to the ground onto a slab or piers, it can have the axles on or off, it can be skirted. So the tiny house on wheels provides some flexibility and mm-hmm. portability, and but can be anchored in just like it's a permanent structure. So when you're building a site-built home, when you're building on land, you definitely work with your local building department, and they're going to let you know what the codes are, what your wind concerns are, what zone you're in, and you're going to build very specifically for that municipality that you're in. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a tiny house on wheels, what you're looking to find out is what, one, are the foundation requirements for that municipality, and then, two, what are the minimum square footage allowances? And in states like Georgia, they've gone all the way down to 70 square feet. And, again, how the land is already determined, how it can be used, is a huge factor, and we want to honor the authority having jurisdiction. They know what's safe. And they're open-armed to tiny houses once they understand that, oh, we're meeting and exceeding standards, and then that we can provide them that record so that they can see for themselves.
So the first step is to go to the local municipality and make sure that what you want to do is permissible by their size standards.
Right, and they're, you know, because there's no definition in code necessarily for tiny houses or tiny houses on wheels, they could be a single-family dwelling under 400 square feet. Uh-huh. It could be a frame on a modular structure that's a permanent chassis or a steel chassis or a steel structure, like other permissible dwellings. And so what we want to do is be able to understand the terminology that the municipality is used to, uh-huh. but to ask them, you know, what would be the requirements to and what will work in this area, and how can we work together to be able to make that happen?
And how do insurance companies view a tiny house? Do they insure differently if it's something that's on wheels or not on wheels, and especially down here in hurricane-prone Florida?
That's a really good question. When we first got started with doing this 4 years ago, we were able to work with an insurance company, Foremost Insurance. It's a sister company of Farmers. And they said that they wanted to insure tiny houses. They wanted to be in that market, but they needed to know that it, they wanted to be able to underwrite. They needed to have risk mitigation, and so they liked our gated five-stage inspection process. They were able to see what went into the home, what standards and codes were being met, and so they were able to develop a product that would be able to insure those homes. And then so when they go through Build-Source certification, and through that process, it grants them eligibility for coverage.
Oh, okay.
Now, then there are other things, though, that do change that, like if it's a Zone 3 or if you're within 50 miles of a coast, say in Florida or the Panhandle, Texas, they do not write for coverage for there because they know the risk. They've dealt with that plenty. So, but elsewhere all throughout the country, they welcome tiny houses with open arms.
Well, it's getting harder and harder
with
even bigger houses that close to the coast anymore.
And I just went through this process with Barbara and have been on the phone with her a couple times, somewhat panicked, looking for my insurance. And in the end, Foremost is okay for me now, but there for the future, I would like to come back here, and I will be within 50 miles. So I'm working with a different company who is probably going to be willing to do it. If they're not, then we'll. So what you do is you get you look at your different company choices, and then you talk to them about what their possibilities are. AAA also is helping in some instances. One of my neighbors got her insurance through a AAA agent up in with one of their brokerages. So
yeah, I'm wondering when they have wheels if they're eligible for AAA or automotive type insurance.
I'm a travel trailer okay. insured. So I have a full homeowner's policy that is through having a permanent residence on a travel trailer.
Okay, yeah. So then how does it work with property insurance then?
I don't pay property insurance if I'm on wheels. That's another advantage of having a tiny house on wheels because I'm not what do they call it? Real property. So
it's fake.
No, <just kidding>. No, that's just the term they use when you have actually ground under your feet. Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
So, yeah.
Well, that's kind of a benefit. And yeah. I would imagine, though, that the rates would be lower for property insurance if you have smaller square footage and smaller value, I would guess.
It's considerably lower. And then, like Betsy said, there is other insurance. There's Lloyd's of London that they insure Hollywood actresses' legs, So they do provide coverage. It's just then, even at the coast, they might not cover a named storm or hail damage.
Yeah, you might have
things. So it's good to compare apples to apples.
Exclusions.
But there is a way to cover that asset. Once you've made that investment into that tens of thousands of dollars, you definitely want to cover the contents and replacement value of your home.
Yeah.
So that's available. And the other thing that inspection and certification provides is risk mitigation for lenders. And so as the movement is growing, we have the opportunity for even 30-year fixed rate, 0 to 3% down FHA, VA loans, and that is coming available. And so
is that, Barbara, is that for are tiny houses on wheels also eligible for financing now?
Yes, they are.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Serge, I wanted to ask you a question. You were recently quoted in a story on ABC 7. It was a story about Cape Coral saying no to a micro cottage community. What was that about? Tell me about that story.
Well, you actually said it pretty well. They had concern about having tiny homes next to rail home and decreasing the real estate value of the home.
Mm-hmm.
What I said is that, we still have to absorb about 1,000 people moving to Florida every day. Every day. So tiny home could be a solution for it. And I think that most people moving in tiny home are also eco-responsible, meaning they're ecologically oriented, meaning they'll do the right thing. That means less land. And I mentioned that several times, the land is very valuable. It has a lot of ecological functions. I'm not sure if those new tiny home owner will be in love with their lawns, because lawns is a problem with fertilizers.
Yes, exactly.
So I think that from what I've seen, most of tiny homeowners actually love the environment, love the outdoors, and not really too concerned about having a very lush and green lawn.
Yeah.
They're very eco-responsible. Mm-hmm. But my project is a very, very different project. We're building that Earth Dome, which is supposed to be very good for energy recovery. It's actually good for filtering the water from runoff from your roof. It helps, energy saving. We're going to move to solar at some point. So it's a different alternative to tiny home, where we're building eco-responsible home that will be lasting for a long time, that will be hurricane resistant as well, and very low maintenance.
Yeah. And Terry, I wanted to ask you, when you're up in the Northlands where it's incredibly cold, I don't know how you're doing it, but when you think about the environmental impact situation, when you have a big giant house in a cold climate like up there, the amount of degrees that you're changing the temperature in a home to make it livable is even greater than the amount of degrees that you have to change the temperature to get a home livable with air conditioning down here. I'm imagining that probably has a pretty big impact to the environment as well.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I mean, it does. And the people that are living here, I mean, they were living in trailers out in pastures when we were in this area 5 years ago in their RVs. And right now, since we're here temporarily, we brought our RV and we're in the world's first indoor RV park. And so what it is it's actually cheaper because they built big pole barns and put the RVs inside, and then the owner supplies the heat and it keeps it consistent at 55, which is enough for the RVs. We don't even have to turn RVs on and nothing's freezing. But otherwise people, you know, you had to insulate and then you had to have, you know, $500 worth of propane delivered and things like that. So, and plus we have lots of sun in Southwest Florida, so we've got lots of advantages down there.
It sounds like there are a number of advantages in Southwest Florida for something like this. How do people get involved in your meetup group if they want to?
Yeah, so you just go to meetup.com. If you haven't been there before, they will require you to sign in and create your own profile. They don't solicit you. And then you just simply put in the things you're interested in, and you can search. So put in a Fort Myers zip code and then look for Tiny House Movement of Southwest Florida. I don't know if I wrote it out or I put SWFL. And then you just simply join it. If anyone has events that they would like to host, just get in contact with me so that they can be a member as well. And if you join that, you will get the link for the upcoming event on the 24th at 4 p.m.
Thanks so much. Well, that's all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest. Terry Records is a realtor and the admin of the meetup group called Tiny House Movement of Southwest Florida. We also talked with Dr. Serge Thomas. He's an associate professor for environmental studies at FGCU. Betsy Barber, a tiny house advocate currently living in Central Florida in her tiny house and continuing commuting to her job down here. And also Barbara Riley. She's the founder and director of Buildsworth International. Barbara, we really appreciate your time.